Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Alright, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where, as I said in the last podcast episode after the final game of the season, another New Orleans Pelicans beatdown? Beignet there, done that. And now, that is all, folks. The Lakers are officially playoff bound! They are the seventh seed once again for the second straight year after beating the Pelicans in the play-in game, 110-106, for the second straight time in the last 3 days. The Lakers are 3-0 all-time in play-in games, and this is, what, 3 out of 4 years that the Lakers have finished seventh. The last team the Lakers faced in the playoffs last year was, of course, versus the Denver Nuggets, and in true poetic fashion, the first team the Lakers shall face in the playoffs this year will be the Denver Nuggets. So, time to get mile high on 420. Time to exercise some Joker demons. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, your thoughts on Jambalaya?
I think it's fine.
Well, guess what? The Lakers, the last 2 days, have had the Pelicans all jumbled.
All right.
You didn't like that? Did you like that? I mean, that was a stretch.
It was good.
Okay, Tommy, how are you doing, by the way? Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I'm doing great. Thank you.
All right, so we got Tommy on a drive-by as he drives back home through the 110 freeway on a busy, what is it today, Wednesday afternoon. So let's start things off this way, Tommy. Well, really quickly, how are you feeling after the last 3 days?
I feel good. It was entertaining basketball. The team has, you know, obviously been playing well. I don't really have any complaints with where things stand right now with this group.
Well, the last podcast episode we did on Friday, you know, I was pre-you Googleizing things for the season. You had a much more optimistic outlook, and your outlook ended up being the outlook to take, because look at the Lakers. They are once again somehow the seventh seed. Let's start things off this way. There were a lot of crucial plays in last night's play-in game versus the New Orleans Pelicans. What would you consider your play of the game? Could be defensive, could be offensive, could be individual player-related or team-related. What are you going to go with for your play of the game with regards to last night's Lakers-New Orleans play-in game?
This is maybe like, maybe this is too obvious of one, but I think the D'Lo corner three with a minute left or 55 seconds or whatever it was left. The team was super, super stagnated offensively. AD couldn't even make a layup. LeBron was 1 for 8 in the fourth quarter and had no legs left. It just felt like we were chucking. Austin looked a little frazzled. But, you know, notwithstanding Austin being frazzled most of the quarter, he, like, made a good play on the drive and kick to D'Lo. D'Lo just, at that point, it felt like he hadn't taken a shot in, like, 3 quarters. I know that's not actually true, but it's like he hadn't taken a shot in a very long time. And he made, like, just super calm. Like, it was just different, you know, from last year where it felt like everything was so, there was so much pressure on every shot. He just took a wide open corner three like it was a practice shot right in front of the Pelicans bench and drilled it. And that gave us the breathing room at that stage in the game that we needed. particularly since Zion had gone out at that point. So, you know, that to me was the play of the game.
Wasn't it sort of indicative of D'Angelo Russell's season this year, where it's like he's been in this zen-like calm state where he's just been able to play his game, right? And it's almost poetic because, you know, in last season's play-in game, D'Angelo Russell was terrible against the Timberwolves. He was like 1 of 8. He had 2 points. He did have 8 assists, but Darvin Ham opted to close with him down the stretch. And guess who hit the game-winning shot for the Lakers? It wasn't D'Angelo Russell last year. It was Dennis Schroeder on the baseline.
Right.
And Matt Ryan was on the bench on the sidelines as well during that shot. This time, Matt Ryan is also on the bench on the sidelines watching D'Angelo Russell, who he was actually teammates with on the Timberwolves before D'Angelo got traded to the Lakers last season. And D'Angelo Russell was yapping the entire game. And for him to coolly sink that and then turn to the bench and say, sit your ass down, sit down, sit down. Yeah, I think it was a very vindicating moment for D'Angelo Russell. And a few plays prior to that, obviously, he had the steal of the game, right? Where he, I mean, this isn't actually my play of the game, but I'll just bring up the steal of the game.
It was. That saved the game, too.
Because the Pelicans were in transition. It was a tie game. And Alvarado was either going to get a layup, or if there was no one there on the baseline covering the baseline, Trey Murphy was going to hit the three, right? They could have gone up and that would have been it. D'Angelo Russell instead uses his 6'10 wingspan to absolutely erase that pass. And it was very poetic that it was against Jose Alvarado. The Lakers go down the other way and Austin Reeves lobs it to AD and the Lakers are up, you know? So,
yeah. And can I just say on the Alvarado, like a couple things about Alvarado, D'Lo, again, it just shows you kind of the growth of him as a player and as, I guess, a competitor in this context. Like, Alvarado should not necessarily have been ejected for what he did in the first quarter to D'Lo, or second quarter, whenever it was, but it should not have been a double technical. I mean, clearly Alvarado initiated all of that, and the second D'Lo started clapping at him, Alvarado puts his finger up like a little baby, like, you know, crying to the teacher, right? And so, like, that is the type of play that could rattle someone, right? It's like, that's Alvarado's whole shtick. He's like a mediocre player who tries to get under your skin. That's like his primary value. And his primary value in this game was D'Lo. It hit like three threes in the first quarter and seemed like it was going to be a D'Lo game. And Alvarado was trying to get under his skin and D'Lo didn't allow it. And I watched that steal like 3 times back because I don't understand how D'Lo's arm extended. Like, it wasn't just like, yeah, Oh, Alvarado made a misread. I mean, he did make a misread, right? And he didn't see D'Lo kind of coming from behind. But that pass that he threw, it's like, it looked like D'Lo should not have been able to intercept it. And D'Lo was just like, I don't know how he got that one, but that saved the game too. Because if New Orleans had made their huge run, they had never taken the lead. If they had made that shot, that would have been the lead. That would have been all the momentum. And who knows what the outcome is at that point, right?
No, but instead it was a transition bucket the other way because D'Lo broke up that transition play. So, I mean, huge plays from D'Lo throughout. And to your point, Tommy, the last shot he even had in the fourth quarter was an open three that he hit at the 8-minute mark, you know? And then the next five minutes was LeBron James and Austin Reeves trying to hunt this Alvarado mismatch, and LeBron just taking some very weird shots. I mean, I kind of understood it, but to James Worthy's point at the post during his post game section on Spectrum Sports, he was like, "I don't like it when we get stagnant like that, and the offense just gets predictable." You know, it wasn't until Austin Reeves just started actually doing a good job playmaking and taking things himself that ironically the offense started to flow, because honestly, I don't know what LeBron was doing for that good 4 minutes. Again, I understood the thought process. I think they were trying to matchup hunt against Alvarado, but I think we spent too much time trying to do that nobody else was involved, you know? Anyways, kudos to D'Lo for the steal. Kudos for the three. My play of the game kind of encapsulates all of that, Tommy. And my play of the game is actually going to Darvin Ham.
Here's
the play of the game. The play of the game for me is a substitution pattern and timeout that Darvin Ham took. So I'll walk you through this.
Okay.
It's the last 3 minutes of the game. I forgot exactly what happened to make the substitution, but he subbed D'Lo out for Gabe Vincent at the 3:29 mark. And when he did that, I was like, ah, hell, here we go. He's going to ice D'Lo, and D'Lo's not going to close. That possession right after that, that offense-to-defense substitution, Zion goes in for the driving layup where he hits 40 points, but he strains his hamstring and ties the game. You know what Darvinham does right after that? To my surprise, he calls a timeout. And then on the next possession, he reinserts D'Lo. And guess what D'Lo did after that? He gets the steal. He hits the three-point dagger of the game. Those are the plays of the game. But they would not have happened, Tommy, if Darvinham had stuck with Gabe Vincent, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, that is huge Darvinham growth. Playoff Darvin is here, apparently. And again, it kind of just shows you, right? This is why you need D'Lo in crunch time. If you're going to sub D'Lo out, then do it the way Ham did. Offense to defense substitution. But you got to find a way to bring D'Lo back in because he's so crucial to the team's spacing, you know, even off ball. And so, yeah, that was an encapsulation, I think, of the whole problem we've had this entire year with Ham's misutilization of D'Angelo Russell. We can go all the way back to the Western Conference Finals where Mike Malone put it into Darvinham's head that D'Lo, we're going to hunt D'Lo. He is the weakest link on your team. And Darvinham was like, you're right. I'm going to crater this dude's confidence and swap things around. But last night showed Darvinham having some sort of foresight and realizing like, no, if I'm going to put Gabe Vincent in, it's just going to be for this possession. The next possession that I can get D'Lo back in, I'm going to do it. You know, so anything to say about my Darvinham substitution pattern being the play of the game?
I'm actually very impressed that you noticed that, because I feel like yesterday was one of the few games that I watched actually live. But I definitely did not catch that. But yeah, it's nice to see. And you saw it actually, now that you mentioned it, I feel like you saw it a little bit in the first half. He broke his normal Spencer rotation to like give Gabe a few more minutes when Gabe was like having a nice stretch of defense and hitting some threes. And Gabe was a huge part of that run at the start of the second quarter to close the gap and then ultimately get us the lead. So that's all you can really ask for from a head coach. Like you have your core rotation. Okay. That's set at this point. Thank God we're in April. It took this long, but it's now set. All we want is some sort of recognition of context. And the fact that like AD is going to play AD's minutes, LeBron is going to play LeBron's minutes, even D'Lo, Austin, like to some extent, they're going to play their normal minutes. But like these fringe rotation players, you have to like be a little bit aware of situations. And Gabe was hitting some shots last night and he was playing really good defense and he got minutes and he had double digit scoring off the bench for us. And that was a huge factor in why we won.
Yeah, he was, but you're not going to close with him the full way through, right? And I'm glad that D'Angelo Russell rewarded Darvinham on both ends of the court and kind of proved this is why you play your best players, right? So any other thoughts on what stood out to you about this Pelicans game? And I guess you can wrap in the final game of the season as well, because I just thought it was so impressive for the Lakers to just take care of business, get the job done. This game obviously fell apart when the offense stagnated, but for the most part, the Lakers are the New Orleans Pelicans, Denver Nuggets, you know, the same way that the Denver Nuggets are to us. Like, it just seems like we have their number. And the fact that we were able to maintain the focus and wherewithal to come back a second game in New Orleans, knowing that we would get New Orleans' best punch, it's very impressive. And I guess a good snapshot of the team's growth throughout the season, where we didn't start this game off very well at all. Like, offensively, Anthony Davis was missing all these bunnies. LeBron James wasn't really shooting well as well. D'Angelo Russell kind of kept the team in it until Darvinham made some wonky substitution where D'Angelo Russell hit two threes, got two assists, and Darvinham stuck with his normal rotation of subbing him out at that point. And you'd wish that Darvinham would be a little bit more flexible when it comes to understanding the rhythm of his players and the flow of the game, because 2 minutes later, when the Lakers still hadn't scored, he brought D'Angelo Russell back in. And I was like, well, that was just pointless, right? That aside, the team was able to rebound even from that rough start. The second quarter unit with D'Angelo Russell, Gabe Vincent, Jackson Hayes, and LeBron James, they were like on a string defensively. They were getting easy buckets in transition through their defense. And you know this team is clicking when D'Angelo Russell is this engaged and locked in defensively. He's cutting Brandon Ingram's like driving lanes off, and then Gabe Vincent is doing his Tasmanian devil thing and teleporting all over the court, trying to get charges and sacrificing his body and all that. And yeah, I mean, there were a couple of plays where LeBron and, you know, D'Lo or whoever got lost off ball and Zion was able to sky in for like an easy layup. But outside of that, if you look at the last two games against the New Orleans Pelicans, I mean, the team looks locked in. Obviously, LeBron James and Anthony Davis are the ones leading the charge through their actions and in the locker room mentally. But you very physically, tangibly see the buy-in from all of the guys. And I don't think I've seen the team this in sync defensively, and credit to Rui in all of this as well. You know, I mean, his defense on Brandon Ingram, holy crap. This is why we saw potential in the slim Rui at the three lineups, you know, and Rui's growth on both ends has been incredible. But to my point about the team just coming together at the right time, even in spite of not having their best defensive player in Jared Vanderbilt, not having another skilled forward in Christian Wood, I mean, you couldn't have asked for better timing with regards to things clicking on both ends of the court. So any other thoughts on just the last two games against the Pelicans?
Yeah, so I think when we last spoke, right, and we last recorded one of these, I guess, like you mentioned, oh, you're eulogizing the team a little bit, but I always felt like even, you know, with back against the, you don't want to be put in the position because anything could happen, of course, but back against the wall, I had some faith that this team could win two must-win games if they needed to, even if it was two in a row. And they didn't need to win both of these games, right? But it was to their, you know, big advantage to do so. And, like, I just want to say, like, beating a team that's fighting for a guaranteed playoff spot in the finale of the season... Sorry, there's a police officer driving by me, so it's about to get really loud. You know, at the end of the season, in their, you know, road closing game, these guys are like doing this absurd maneuver. Okay, sorry.
Now they're passing. I like this play-by-play.
You know, their home closer, right? Last game of the season, last game at home, they were rolling at this point. They were playing really good basketball the entire second half of the season. They're a talented team. They're well coached. They play tough defense and they shoot threes. This is like recipe for playoff success, or certainly like close game success. We came out and beat their ass by like 30 points, right? And like, I don't, that wasn't the final score, but it was a 30 point beating, basically, yeah, is what it felt like for most of the game. Like, okay, guys had to come back in, whatever. It was a 30 point beating. It is really, really, really hard to now go back into that same team's arena 2 days later after you embarrass them on their home court in a game that now really actually does like really, really matter. It's a playoff game, really. And to beat them again, and not just beat them, but again, like other than there were some questionable calls and some questionable maybe decisions by the guys on the floor. But like we were up by almost 20 points again on these guys. Right. And mm-hmm. And so like, we've seen it with this LeBron AD teams, these LeBron AD teams the past few years, when they are engaged and locked in, like they blitz teams. And we've seen it like in different circumstances, like during the championship season, we were obviously like the one seed all year. And we lost the opening game in that playoff run to Portland. Game two against Portland, blitz them. We won by like 30. Same thing, game two against Houston. We won by like 30. Like when they like decide it's game six, the clinching game to win against Miami, we were up by like 40 at some point in that game. You know what I mean? Like when they decide it's time, like I don't know what they're telling guys. Like, and I don't know why it seems like LeBron teams always seem to be able to do this, but like there's a different gear and there's like a switch that this team is able to flip. And I think like last season, we closed the season really, really well, like we did this year. The focus was on defense. This year, we closed the season and had a historically good second half of the season offensively. The fact that we were able to turn on the defense when needed is very, very encouraging to me, because if this team can score, I have pretty good faith that they, after watching the last couple games, that they'll be able to turn on the defense. Now, that doesn't mean I think we can beat any team in the league. We'll talk about that more. But, you know, I just think that this two-game set, like, it is really, in this Western Conference, like, we talk about it, like, in hindsight, like, oh, it was a 7-8 matchup. New Orleans was cruising in the sixth seed to close the season. We took them out of that. And so this was, like, a legit playoff team that we beat on the road twice in a row. Like, that does not happen. And a team that was, like, better than us, right, for most of the season. Better than us the entire season, really. And we just beat them twice in a row on their home court. It's like, imagine starting a best of seven series 2-0 as the road team. Like, how rare is that, right? So that's essentially what we did in those two games. And so it's given me a lot of things, I think, to be optimistic about moving into the playoffs now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the New Orleans Pelicans were rolling and we stopped their momentum right in their tracks, you know, at home. They were coming home. They were actually on a roll on the road. You would think that that would give your team so much momentum, and I'm sure it did. Obviously, having to integrate Brandon Ingram is tough. Having to integrate someone that substantial is always tricky. But still, like the fact that the Lakers were able to do it two times in a row, very, very impressive. And Anthony Davis, his back wasn't loose yet the last game too, so he wasn't operating at optimal levels. And look, he had a rough game last night. He was missing all these bunnies, but he led the team in scoring with 10 points in the fourth. That huge offensive rebound he had on the LeBron missed shot to get fouled. Like, this is how you know. No, that's exactly what I was going to say. You know AD is locked in when he's knocking down his clutch free throws. And these aren't just like normal fourth quarter free throws. These are like, we need every single one of these. There's only 15 seconds left free throws. Like, kind of reminiscent of the free throws he hit in that Bucks game without LeBron James, right? Where he's just drilling these crunch time free throws. And yeah, and LeBron James, you know, he was like 0-for-7 at one point in the fourth quarter, but that Kobe jab step shoulder shimmy shiver that he put on Herb Jones to hit the mid-range jump shot was huge. And you know, the game prior when him and AD dominated, the defensive intensity that LeBron is bringing and just how healthy he looks when he's driving it into the lane and knowing that he can go to that card whenever he wants because he's feeling a lot healthier, I mean, that's a game changer for the Lakers, right? When LeBron James is once again a lethal driver, we'll see how much he does that in the Denver series. But so far in the last week or so to close this season, I've been very encouraged with how LeBron James has been moving and his willingness to just knife into the paint and bully ball the hell out of these other stronger players. You know, that Zion and Jonas are not easy players to go into the paint against, but LeBron just keeps doing it. So very encouraged. And then before we take it to break, I really quickly want to just give props to the other guys, because Anthony Davis rightfully gave credits to those other guys, AR, D'Lo, Rui, Gabe, for upholding the Lakers team while him and LeBron James were struggling, at least offensively. Austin Reeves, you know, like, he was worrying me in the fourth quarter when he just had the ball the entire time.
By the way, did he look sick to you? I feel like he had these like dark circles under his eyes. I was like, what's wrong with this guy?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's, I'm not sure. But I just thought like, oh man, here we go. Like, there's too much usage going on in the fourth quarter right now. To his credit, he did not chuck up shots. He took the shots that were available to him because he was open like that. I think he had like a floater in the lane or like a finger roll in the lane that was wide open. But outside of that, his lob to Anthony Davis and obviously drawing in the defense and kicking it out to D'Lo, that shows huge signs of growth for Austin Reeves, where initially I thought that dude is taking it up all the way. He's going to try and draw the foul. He's going to pump fake and somebody's going to strip the ball, you know, but he was decisive with his passes. The playmaking was there. I still would like for the Lakers to divvy that up a little bit and not just have Austin Reeves be the sole safety valve ball handler in crunch time. But last night, I was at least encouraged by what I saw in knowing that, okay, there is a good version of Austin Reeves that makes high basketball IQ plays and isn't just solely relying on saucing his way into some, you know, crazy shot that he'll either hit or will become a turnover. So huge props to Austin. We already talked about D'Lo. Rui Hachimura at this point, he's just, I call him like quietly clerical, because he's just getting it done. Like, whatever the team needs him to do, he was 5 of 6 from the field, hit both of his threes, had this really nice, like, dribble drive on Dyson Daniels in the triple threat position with the other guys fanned out, and he just hit this nice layup off the glass. Like, he's making, like, really nice passes as well, like, making the right reads on offense, cutting where he's supposed to cut off ball. And then last night, the defense on Brandon Ingram, just using his physicality, shuffling his feet. I mean, the growth that we've seen from Rui on both ends, it's been incredible. And then lastly, Gabe Vincent, I mean, 9 points. He hit 2 threes last night, I think, which is the same amount of threes he hit during the season. Unfortunately, it doesn't count on the stat sheet because play-ins don't count. But Gabe Vincent, 9 points. His physicality and his hustle is infectious. He is like a little brick wall. Those Derek Fisher comps are pretty apt. And yeah, last night he also added the Derek Fisher threes to go along with everything. His pairing with D'Angelo Russell in the backcourt has been very effective. That's kind of no surprise, because if you pair one of the skill guards with a gritty defender, things tend to level out. But yeah, I think Gabe Vincent really helped set the tone of the defensive tone for the team. And if Gabe Vincent is not necessarily locking down a particular ball handler, he is at the very least making your team defense scheme super tight. Like, he just makes everything click because of the way that he rotates out, the way he converges, and the way he's able to impede ball handlers by using his body. Like, he is a little brick wall. And yeah, just your thoughts on the other guys, and maybe even particularly Gabe Vincent.
Yeah, with Gabe, it's like unfortunate because this is what we spent the money on, right? It's like he's like, the way he can impact a game defensively, it almost reminds you like a small Caruso. Like, he's not just getting steals. He's not doing the like Schroeder theatrics where it's like, I'm going to pick you up full court, but like, you're going to blow by me 50% of the time. Like, he's just always in perfect defensive positioning. His rotations are on point. His one-on-one defense is on point. It feels like, I don't know what he's doing on shot contests, but it feels like even on jumpers, like on shot contests, like even over like taller offensive players, like something about the way he's contesting these jump shots, it seems like it causes a disproportionate amount of misses. So he's just like really locked in. We said all year that like we needed a guy like that next to Austin/D'Lo. And I think Gabe has looked good in pretty much every lineup except when it's just him and Spencer. So like, I've been really, really pleased with him. Spencer obviously has been great. Really, all of the other guys have been great. And we talked about this a little bit too, but it was kind of even Torian Prince. And it's like, it's nice that LeBron and AD both got a bad game out of the way, and we still won, because that bodes well, I think, for the coming games.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually had a dark horse candidate for play of the game was Torian Prince's weak side block on Zion Williamson going
over. That was a sick block.
So props to Torian Prince. He is doing his job in under 24 minutes, of course. All right, why don't we take it to break? When we return, let's get down to business and talk about the Denver Nuggets, the Lakers' first round series opponent. We will catch you guys after the turn.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so we are back. The Denver Nuggets again. It doesn't get any more poetic than this. The Lakers' last playoff opponent was the Nuggets. Their first playoff opponent this year is the Denver Nuggets. The Lakers are 0-8 in their last 8 games versus the Nuggets. The last time they beat the Nuggets was in December 2022. That was the game where AD left early with a foot injury that would inevitably keep him out for the next 20 games. This is a boss-level challenge in round one, Tommy. But maybe this is the best way to do things. You know, we may end up burning ourselves out just trying to claw and fight our way to make it out of this series or even make this series competitive. And even if we miraculously make it out of this series, we may not have enough juice left for the journey. That's certainly one outcome, or this could also be the start of an impenetrable confidence booster that really fuels the rest of the Lakers' 2023-24 playoff run. That's the way more opposite outlook of how this series might go. But regardless, I am surprisingly very amped and more excited about this series than I thought I would be heading into it. Just because now I'm kind of faced with the fact that, or I've come to the realization that this is what we've been playing for. This is what we've been waiting for. Obviously, we play for championships, but this is the reigning world champion, right? And yeah, we have prepared this entire season for this team because we got so royally embarrassed last year. We got swept. All anybody can talk about this entire season, Tommy, with regards to D'Angelo Russell is Western Conference Finals. Didn't you watch the Western Conference Finals? Oh my God, Western Conference Finals. And for me, if I'm one of the players, if I'm D'Angelo Russell, if I'm Anthony Davis, and I'm hearing about how I cannot beat these Eurocorns, Jokic owns me, like the Lakers are a -9 whenever I'm on the court against the Nuggets. Like, I don't know, man. It could end up being the same tale and pattern that we've seen this whole last year and a half, or it could just be the perfect storm for the Lakers really showing their resiliency and how much they've learned in the last year. So for me, if they can just get this mile-high monkey off of their back, who knows what could happen, provided everyone stays healthy, of course. But I've come around to realizing that this is what we've waited for. This is the team we have the most to prove against. And AD and LeBron seem excited. They've mentioned cooking some things up in the lab together for this exact matchup. It seems like they're salivating. And yeah, I guess just existentially, how are you feeling entering this Nuggets game before we talk about, like, you know, the season series and what we project out going forward?
I think at a high level, I feel good about the matchup. Look, Denver is, in my opinion, the best team in the NBA. I don't watch Boston super closely, and I'm not trying to make like a Laker Boston point here. I just, like, until Boston makes a significant run and wins some like real serious playoff games, they're like shoot 65 threes a night strategy. I just feel like that often fails in the playoffs. But you know, Denver to me overall is still probably the best team in the NBA. So we probably will lose this. I mean, we're underdogs, right? So like, we're probably going to lose this series, but I just think that like, this is our chance, you know, like the team is hot. LeBron and AD are both healthy. We haven't had the grind of the whole like month and a half long to, you know, reach Denver later in the process. Like, you know, we've gotten guys back, guys are getting into a rhythm. At some point people burn out in any job, in any context, you know, any environment. We don't have that problem right now. We're kind of peaking as a team right now. Mm-hmm. And this is the chance. If we had any chance at all, it's right now. And so that's why I'm like, in a way, happy to get Denver out of the way right now. Because if we're not going to beat them now, we're not going to beat them in a month. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'd rather just do it now.
Yeah, I mean, there's the argument to be made that if Denver was in a different bracket, some other team might take care of them for us, or by the time we face them, Vanderbilt and Christian Wood might be back. But, you know, at this point, even if Vando and Christian Wood are back, it's so late in the game that you can't really count on that factor. And to your point, the other guys might be burned out. And so I agree with you. I think the rip the Band-Aid off mentality, while it may end up shortening how many Lakers games we watch in the playoffs this year and shortening how much we can enjoy another LeBron James playoff run, I also think that LeBron James is the ultimate competitor, right? He's literally the GOAT, and he was embarrassed last year. That was the first series that he ever got swept in, right? I'm very interested in seeing what he has in store for us, you know? And
yeah,
so this season, the Lakers played the Nuggets in three games, and I was talking to you offline before we started recording, but it's really hard to glean too much from those three games because they were very incomplete from both ends, actually. The first game of the season, or our first game against the Nuggets, came during the first game of the season. At that point, we just weren't ready for our revenge tour yet. It was in Denver. We didn't know who we wanted to be. Torian freaking Prince was starting at the three. Rui Hachimura only played 17 minutes that game. Pretty self-explanatory why we lost. The second game was right after the trade deadline. D'Angelo Russell wasn't available. I don't think we had Spencer Dinwiddie yet. Yeah, we were an incomplete team, and that was the game where Skylar Mays went on his little, like, Kendall Marshall Linsanity run with LeBron James, Rui Hachimura, Jackson Hayes, and Christian Wood. Maybe we use that as a template for something that might work going that big, even though we don't have a lot of those players available. But yeah, this huge-ass lineup with Skylar Mays helped ignite a run to cut the lead down to, like, 3 points in the third quarter slash fourth quarter. But ultimately, we ended up succumbing to the Denver Nuggets because, yeah, we didn't have D'Angelo Russell and our full team yet. The third game, the one where we were most complete, I don't think the Nuggets had KCP in that game, though. But regardless, the Lakers, the third game was the game in which the Lakers probably had their best shot at winning. They were in control the entire first half. I believe they were up by 9 at halftime. They were slicing and dicing the Nuggets on the offensive end. They had really good off-ball cutting and passing principles. On defense, they kind of used this strategy to let Jokic try and beat them on his own. And then that's the same game, unfortunately, where they lost grip of the rope in the second half, and when things go haywire, Ham tends to short circuit, and that's when he galaxy brained the operation by, of course, closing with Cam Reddish over D'Angelo Russell. So yeah, there are some things to take away from those games, but ultimately what I take away from it is the Lakers were an incomplete team at each juncture, and in the last 2 or 3 months of the season, we have seen them become such a better team, a more cohesive team, especially on the offensive end. And we have seen the fruits of continuity, Tommy. That is the biggest thing that we're bringing with us this season, cohesion. D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, those are the guys getting the most minutes. And you have seen them almost fire on all cylinders on the offensive end, and how This year, this series against the Denver Nuggets, I don't think the Denver Nuggets are going to be able to defend us as easily as they have been in prior seasons or prior games, because we're just clicking on both ends of the court. And where did I want to go with this? I guess let's talk about what is different this time around. Obviously LeBron James is healthier than he was last year, and that is huge. So hopefully he'll be able to take it physically to Jokic and make him work. The other thing that I want to point out, Tommy, is hopefully this doesn't happen, but because of LeBron James' bum foot last year, do you remember how poorly he shot from three-point land against the Nuggets?
I don't remember the number, but his whole year was off from three, and it got even worse in the playoffs.
Okay, so he shot 7 of 26 from three in that series. He was terrible. This year, LeBron James shot 41% from three, okay? This was his second best three-point shooting season since 2012-13 with the Miami Heat. If he can even just carry over the 37% version of that, we're going to be a different team, because I think he's also going to be coupling that with his attacking in the paint this season. So when they shut off the lane and LeBron James can kill them from the outside, I think that's one huge difference that may favor us this time around. As I mentioned, the continuity that we're bringing in this season, the five-out principles that we've implemented and have started to get comfortable with, the offense is humming. Like, look at the last game that we played, the Denver Nuggets. There were times when I was like, wow, we are cutting and outpassing Denver through the first three quarters the way that Denver likes to cut and outpass us, you know? When we look like we have when it looks like our heads are swiveling, our heads are on a swivel because we don't know where guys are going, we were doing that to the Denver Nuggets in the last game. And so we've become less predictable on offense and can attack Denver in different ways. We also have Gabe Vincent now, as well as Spencer Dinwiddie. Gabe Vincent in the Miami Heat Denver Nuggets series last year actually didn't spend too much of his time guarding Jamal Murray. But I think overall, team principle, team scheme defense-wise, I think Gabe Vincent will help pull everything together. And obviously with a guy like Jamal Murray, it's about throwing different looks at him. So Gabe Vincent will get some time on him. LeBron James might get some time on him. Austin Reeves obviously is going to start out on him. But also I think Spencer Dinwiddie might have a pretty good series, because if his last few months of the season where he was locking down guys like Tyrese Maxey and switching on to guys like Kelly Oubre, Tobias Harris, shutting off Damian Lillard's water. If any of that is an indication of what he can bring in a playoff setting defensively, I think Spencer Dinwiddie could be a very important player in this series, and he will play the Caleb Martin role against Jamal Murray. Caleb Martin was the guy who was primarily tasked to defend Murray in the finals. And then lastly, I think the Denver Nuggets bench depth is worse than last year. They have really good young players in Christian Braun and Peyton Watson, but at the end of the day, those are still young players. But yeah, what are some things that are different this time around that you're kind of holding on to positively?
So health is a big one, and I don't think it could be understated. It's funny how everyone's memory is so short. We won two series and made it to the conference finals and gave Denver a competitive series with LeBron basically playing on like one leg. I mean, he was not anywhere close to like what he did this season. He was not doing that last season. Folks forget that like he almost did not come back last season. You know, it's like he missed a bunch of games to close. It was like there was rumors that like the Lakers were just sort of leading us on and he actually wasn't going to come back. And then all of a sudden he shows up for like the last two games and he clearly is like playing through a broken foot or whatever was wrong with him. Right. But it's a significant, significant difference. You're getting like LeBron at like his worst versus like more often than not his best right now. That's a huge factor. AD, you know, he obviously missed a significant stretch of time during the season last season. He closed the season playing like 18, 19 games in a row. And so everybody was like, oh, he's healthy. But he was not healthy either, really. You know, it's like he was playing like a lot of like low to the ground defense. He wasn't as active, certainly offensively. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he was not putting up the scoring numbers and efficiency numbers that he's putting up now. That's two big changes right there, right? And those are both health related. You touched on some of the others. But I think, you know, another big one is like you said, the Gabe and Spencer additions. Those guys are effectively replacing, you know, your Dennis and Troy Brown and Lonnie Walkers, right? And so Gabe, like you said, who knows how much he's going to be guarding Murray in this series. But forget about Murray. Like, what about KCP, like, curling around these screens and, like, hitting timely threes? And, you know, KCP, of course, like, likes to light us up because we're his former team, right? So,
or Reggie Jackson.
Or even Reggie Jackson. So having Gabe to just, like, soak up some minutes against those guys is such a huge advantage. And you know, compared to what we had last year. And this is, like, more low-key, but, you know, again, people kind of forget we made it to the Western Conference Finals playing Rui and LeBron on one foot as our backup centers. By the time we got to the Western Conference Finals, I mean, honestly, even like part of the way through the Denver or the Golden State series, it felt like Wenyan was already out of the rotation at this point. It was AD playing on, you know, the best he could for 40 minutes. And we were soaking up these like 10 minute stretches with LeBron and Rui. And we were getting unsurprisingly destroyed during those minutes. Now, Jackson Hayes is not like a world beater, right? He's got his flaws as a player. He's not like an all-star. I'm not going to like overstate the importance of Jackson Hayes to this series, but Jackson Hayes is an athletic big man who can make some plays. And if you're telling me 10 minutes we need to have like Rui play the center or 10 minutes we need to have Jackson Hayes play the center, I'm taking Jackson Hayes in that situation. You know, so it's like there are enough of these like sort of marginal upgrades here that I sort of think that, you know, we've positioned ourselves well. And on the flip side, I mean, like I keep saying, Denver, I think, is the best team in the NBA, but they, I don't think, got better than they were last year. I think they're about the same overall. I'm not going to say they got worse, even though they lost Bruce Brown, who was a huge part of what they did, especially in the playoffs. But I don't think they got significantly better. And I think we actually got significantly better. Like D'Lo was benched and, you know, had a horrible playoffs, had sort of a mixed regular season even leading into the end of the year and wasn't getting consistent minutes with sharing the backcourt with Dennis and our other guards. So, like, it's just so many things are different now that seem to be positives for us. Is it enough to beat Denver because they're that good? I don't know. But That's why I'll keep saying this is our best chance right now.
And also, isn't it kind of encouraging that Darvin Ham got his bullshit out of the way with that last game that we lost to Denver, where he, you know, benched D'Angelo Russell for Cam Reddish and literally reverted back to what happened in the Western Conference Finals and what happened in December when he scapegoated D'Angelo Russell? And how did that turn out for him? Another loss where Cam Reddish couldn't stop Jamal Murray, and we couldn't score on the other end. And so I'm glad that Darvin Ham got that shit out of the way so that finally we are now here, Tommy. Like, if we haven't learned from 0-8 in the last 8 games, from the countless times that we've lost to this same team, I don't know. Existentially, I am just banking on the competitive element surging in LeBron James' veins. Like, these guys were embarrassed. D'Lo was embarrassed. In a year that's been sort of defined by overcoming obstacles and sometimes obstacles within your own locker room, proving doubters wrong, shooting down overblown narratives, and kind of being relentless in the face of adversity, I think these Lakers, and especially guys like D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Davis, they are ready to put things to the test, leave everything out on the line, and put it all out on the floor. And so I'm excited to see what that looks like, even if the best case scenario of what that looks like is a 6-game series. You know, I will still take that as improvement. And yeah, the Lakers have momentum on their side. Like you mentioned, they're like 22-10 in their last 32 games since Rui was inserted into the starting lineup. And then the other thing that goes along the same lines as your health point is just the fact that in the first round, the Lakers have a more spaced out schedule to get right. Not only do they have these 3 days to rest up to prepare for the Nuggets on Saturday, I believe in between game 2 and game 3, they get 2 full days off as well before returning home to Crypto. And so that is going to be huge, not only for LeBron James, but for Anthony Davis to heal up his, you know, spazzing out lower back. So what are some key things that you'd point to that you would like to see the Lakers do in order to maybe gain the upper hand on the Nuggets? For me, I think it's they have to try and keep D'Angelo Russell involved early and often just to see if they can get him into a rhythm. In fact, I believe the first play they should run in game one, Tommy, is like one of those Spain pick and roll actions where D'Angelo Russell flares out to the top of the 3-point line and LeBron James hits him. I want to see D'Angelo Russell see the bucket go in for the first time and hit that three to really get him going, because he's in a rhythm now. He's got momentum on his side, just having these clutch moments against the New Orleans Pelicans, really having 2 stellar games in the Lakers' most important moments. And I think it's important to keep that good vibes, lit vibes snowball going for D'Angelo Russell, because as we've seen from how he hits shots, it only takes one shot to get D'Angelo Russell going. And I think that goes for the larger theory of how we look at games. D'Angelo Russell has one good game, he can carry that through onward. What else? Yeah, if Darvin Ham can, I would love for him to go with more size, whether that's a Jackson Hayes, LeBron James, Rui Hachimura lineup, where we can use our physicality but also showcase some of our athleticism, specifically in transition, to get the Nuggets working and running. I think that would be for the best. And really, the other guys have to hold serve. One, the stars have to hold serve. LeBron needs to at least be the second best player in this series. AD needs to at least be the third best player. And then the other guys, D'Lo, Austin, Rui, they need to hold serve against the Aaron Gordons, KCPs, and MPJs of the world and have games where they can outplay that trio tit for tat. It can't just be those guys are like consistently outplaying our role players. But yeah, any keys that you have that you'd like to see implemented against the Nuggets that you think will be effective?
I think the first one for me, and this is to me the most important, to me, this is going to determine the outcome of this series, is can we slow down Jamal Murray? We don't have to shut him down, okay? But if you look at his numbers against us last year in that 4-game sweep, like, these were like all-world numbers. This was not like, oh, he was an all-star who had a good series. It was like historically good, you know what I mean? And if you look at his run in prior years, Jamal Murray has always, by the way, been a very good playoff player. And just a good player in general, but especially like ramps it up in the playoffs. And if you look at his stats from prior years, even last year in series other than the four-game sweep of the Lakers, he puts up good numbers. I mean, he puts up like all-star numbers, but he does not put up all-world numbers. And if, when you're thinking about like the difference, like we lost three of those four games by a combined like 6 points or something.
12, like, but yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking about like marginal, you know, differences. If you can cut Jamal Murray from like a 35 point per game guy to like a, you know, high 20s, but like that could be the difference in you winning or losing the series. And so I think like figuring out how to slow him down is going to be so key, because I feel like there's so much talk about Jokic. And if we end up losing the series, I just am not going to be able to tolerate an entire, it's going to happen, but I'm not going to really have patience for tolerating another offseason of Lakers need to add more size because of Jokic. I mean, like, look, we can talk about whether the Lakers need to add more size. There's not a player in the NBA who can stop Jokic. That's why he's like the multi-time MVP. That's why he puts up his like absurd, like historic numbers on absurd efficiency night in and night out. He like very rarely has an off night. I mean, like less than 5% chance he's not going to put up his like baseline numbers or better. He's going to get his. Like, what we're going to have to do though is just slow down Jamal Murray. And if we can do that, I think other pieces start to like fall apart. If we are slowing down Jamal a little bit better, maybe that's one less KCP three. Maybe that's one less Michael Porter Jr. wide open corner three. And like, it, that I think is going to be the key. I think kind of related to that, we need to figure out something with these guys defensively. I think having a little bit of more time to prep this time is going to help. Denver was the high seed last year. They played their, we went through all the numbers last year, but their five-man groups, like especially their starting five, had just played like orders of magnitude more possessions than our groups had, right? And so, you know, they're going to be really in sync offensively, but it just felt like game planning wise, we had a really good game plan against the Golden State Warriors and how to switch their crazy, like, illegal screen system, and it didn't feel like we had that. And then all of a sudden we get to Denver, who's running like a sort of similar motion offense, and it just felt like guys were completely lost. So yeah, the back cutting when Jokic is holding the ball, that, you know, watching out for that kind of stuff, and just, you know, cleaning up some of those like easy buckets that we were giving up last year, I think that's going to be a big key too, because if we are not able to get stops, like they will be able to turn it on enough offensively, defensively, to get stops on us at the end of games. And that's, if you look back in the history of our struggles with Denver, is every time it gets to the winning time of a game, Denver is able to turn it on and we have no answer for it. We have no answer for how we're going to score when they decide to turn on their defense. And then once they've turned on their defense and they're getting turnovers and they're not, you know, the momentum's on their side, our guys are expending so much energy trying to score that we can't go defend them anymore. And it's the same story over and over and over. Now, I don't think this team is the same team that has lost eight in a row to Denver, like this exact group that we're going to roll out now and the way we're playing. But, you know, and by the way, like we have had stretches, like we lost to the Clippers 10 times in a row too, or whatever, under Ty Lue. And then we went 3-1 against them this year. So there's a chance. I just think that like these, like Denver is a championship caliber team for a reason, and they are not going to make mistakes when it comes time to execute down the stretch. So we cannot be, you know, giving them free back cut layups, you know, off Joker passes and free corner threes because Jamal Murray broke us down on the perimeter in crunch time situations. We need to make those two guys go one-on-one, you know, or one-on-three, you know, the same way that LeBron and AD are going to have to do down the stretch. And we can't let them team ball us like for 48 minutes because it's just not going to work.
Yeah, I think the Lakers team, especially off-ball wise, everybody's heads needs to be on a swivel in the good sense. Like, we can't have D'Lo and LeBron, you know, not paying attention for a single second, because that's when the Denver Nuggets attack you and absolutely kill you for those minuscule second mistakes. You know, like 1 second and you're not paying attention, it's over. And the Nuggets are particularly lethal because it almost seems like they have multiple D'Angelo Russells on their team, in the sense that once they see one shot go in, it is an absolute avalanche and they can't stop hitting, you know? And I mean, case in point, Michael Porter Jr. was 10 of 10 the last game he played us, 25 points, hit all five of his threes. That cannot happen. Rui Hachimura has to take it to that guy, make him feel his broad shoulders. We got to fight fire with fire for the first three quarters. And then the fourth quarter, LeBron James and Anthony Davis need to muck it up. Really make Jokic feel them, you know? Get those foul calls. Try and get Aaron Gordon in foul trouble. Like, we need to make this kind of grimy while also using our offensive skill to, you know, show Denver that we can fight offensive fire with fire. So it needs to be a good combo of both.
And I just want to build on that point for a second, because I think that's a really, really, really good point that people are going to overlook. Basketball is there's two sides of the court, okay? And it's not, you can't compartmentalize just the offense and just the defense. There's not kickoff possessions. One side flows into the other, okay? It's all related. Our team's overwhelming strength right now is we are elite offensively. We are literally the best team in the NBA this season. I think you were posting some stuff about this. I've said it on podcasts. NBA scoring has gone down every month this season since December. And the Lakers, during that stretch that the scoring and offense around the league has gone down, have put up franchise record numbers. Okay. And that means something. And when you say fight fire with fire, I 100% agree. This is not like the time to figure out, like, how are we going to hold Denver to 80 points? They're going to score. And part of the way we're going to keep their defense off balance their offense off balance is by making them expend some energy trying to defend our guys, because our guys have shown they can compete at that level.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, D'Angelo Russell did that the last game against Jamal Murray. He had 17 points and 3 assists. You know, we were on the right track. And so I guess this is a good segue really quickly into what worries you the most outside of the obvious going up against Denver. My quick 3 points are Darvin Ham. Will he revert back to bad NBA Twitter narratives and bench his best players when things get testy? Or will he stick with the guys who got him here? Will he have a poor pulse on the game and not understand the rhythm of his own players? Pull them at the wrong times when they've got something going on the offensive end? Go with the wrong lineup combos at the exact worst times? How is he going to be with his timeout usage? Like, again, he's shown growth this season, but there are still games, even last game again, where he didn't understand the flow of the game and pulled D'Angelo Russell out when he was the only one uplifting our offense. And this is a man who started game one last year with a 3-guard lineup against the Denver Nuggets, all because he started Dennis Schroeder the last game of the Golden State Warriors series and he wanted to reward him. So I am still concerned with what Darvin Ham may do. Number two, too much Austin Reeves. I praised him for how he handled the late game situations against the New Orleans Pelicans and how well he passed the ball in that context, but Denver's going to adjust to what Austin Reeves did to them last year too, when he averaged like 20, 25 and 5, you know? And if we allow Austin Reeves to soak up too much of that on-ball usage and we do not diversify our offense, Denver is going to make us pay. And the last thing you want to do against Denver is turn the ball over and get them going in transition, you know? So I hope that we do not go all out Austin, all him, you know, all the time in this series. And then lastly, do we have enough rebounding? Anthony Davis has been a beast on the glass. LeBron James is going to do his thing. Rui Hachimura has improved as a rebounder. But it is unfortunate that this is the team that we sort of built a roster around, and we are missing guys like Christian Wood and Jared Vanderbilt, who are also one of our best rebounders. And so can this team collectively rebound the ball? We may get the stops, but if we don't get the board, it's going to be second chance opportunities for Denver, and they are going to eat up our mistakes. So yeah, any other thoughts on what worries you the most, or if you want to build off of what I just mentioned?
Yeah, I think I'll build off what you mentioned, because I think those are the points. I think with respect to coaching, like, I honestly think it's the case that, again, 1 through 8, 1 through 10, I think we are as talented, if not in some way, maybe we could be considered more talented than Denver. We've talked about it. The top four players in the series are who they are. It's going to be Jokic number one, and then hopefully LeBron, but, you know, LeBron, Murray, AD in some order after Jokic, right? And so, like, that's sort of locked. Now, I just have a lot more faith that Michael Malone is going to be able to get the most out of KCP and Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon in this series than I do, you know, Darvin Ham getting the most out of the guys he needs to get the most out of. Because if we're going to have a chance to win this series, D'Angelo Russell, Rui, and, you know, especially, and then Austin Reeves as well, need to be so much better than, like, the next three guys on Denver that we can make up for, like, how good Jokic is right now, right? Like, Jokic is the best player, arguably, in the world. And so we have to be able to, like, counteract that by having just better depth. I think we have the depth. I think we spent the offseason, like, collecting it and retaining it where it was needed. I think the last few months we've done a good job of putting that all together. And to your point, though, like, what happens when things get testy? What happens in game one where, like, we're keeping it close, maybe we build a little bit of a lead, and then Darvin, with 9 minutes to go in the fourth, goes to his defensive prevent, you know, lineup, and then we lose by, you know, five at the end because we couldn't score for 20 minutes because, you know, Cam Reddish and ineffective offensive players are on the court. So coaching is a concern for me because I don't have any doubts that Michael Malone is going to coach this series perfectly. He's going to have his team ready to go. And I wouldn't be surprised if Ham pulled out a good series, but I'm not expecting it. And then to your point, I think another big one is rebounding. I'm not going to get too into, you know, all the other details you covered, but, like, the rebounding, I actually think Christian Wood being out is a bigger loss in this series than Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt is a really good defender, but he got cooked by Jamal Murray. I mean, really what we'd be looking for from Vanderbilt in this series is, can you give us 5 minutes against Murray? Because he got cooked by Murray last year. He was basically played off the floor because he was so ineffective offensively. And he doesn't give you a ton of rebounding, certainly not as much as Christian Wood. So, you know, and like, by the way, like, Denver has big wings, but it's like Michael Porter Jr. is trying to shoot corner threes. Aaron Gordon is trying to back you down. Neither of those really require a Jared Vanderbilt, his presence, but, like, off the bench, Christian Wood's ability to just gobble up random rebounds and use his length, like, yes, that is going to be a problem because Denver killed us on the glass last year. And, you know, we're, I think, a slightly better rebounding team this year than we were last year, but we're not great. And, you know, Jokic is going to get his rebounds. But again, not just Jokic, like Michael Porter Jr., he crashes the glass. Like, Aaron Gordon is super athletic and crashes the glass. And so, you know, I'm worried that, and maybe this bleeds into coaching, that there's going to be so much focus on the high level problems with Denver. Like, how are we going to stop Jokic? How are we going to stop Murray? How are we going to, you know, deal with the scoring against all their size in the paint? And we're going to lose focus on some of these details. Rebounding could be the difference in this series, frankly.
Yeah, and sadly, this is a series where, you know, you want to have enough point of attack defenders and guards out there to throw at Murray while also still maintaining some sort of defensive rebounding integrity. And do you know what player and what guard fits that bill? It's Max Christie, but obviously he's not in the rotation anymore. And it's just unfortunate. You look on the other side of the bench, Tommy, and you've got Christian Braun and a rookie Peyton Watson. I believe he's a rookie, or he's either a rookie or a sophomore. And they're literally in the rotation for this championship level team. Having said that, I think there are ways that the Lakers can take advantage of that bench's inexperience, because as athletic and sturdy as Christian Braun and Peyton Watson are, I mean, hopefully you can buy some calls on them, right? By using your veteran savviness, whether that's Spencer Dinwiddie doing that, D'Angelo Russell taking advantage, LeBron James taking advantage. So there are some things here that the Lakers can, take advantage of, and I hope we play the chess pieces right this time around. As LeBron James said, I don't play chess, but, you know, if I did, this is what I would do. So final prediction, Tommy, how many games do you have this series going? Yeah.
Final prediction, I'm going to say it goes 6 and we lose 4-2.
So we're losing at home?
Yeah.
Damn, that's rough. I'll take that as improvement and progress, though. So initially, the last podcast episode when I had Ricky from the Late Night Lake Show on, I said I had the Lakers also losing in 6. But Tommy, it is a new day, and I have revised my prediction. I have this series going 7 games, and in a win-or-die scenario, if LeBron James and Anthony Davis are healthy, they are pulling this shit out of their butts.
Oh,
and we're heading to the second round against, who are we playing? Is it the Phoenix or Minnesota bracket?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And we're going to face the Suns, Kevin Durant, or Karl Anthony Towns. So Lakers in 7, baby. Let's go. Boom, 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 boom. All right. With that said, we have gone on long enough. It's going to be exciting. This is what we've all been waiting for. This is going to be one of the most exciting first round matchups that I think we've ever had. And because of the parity in the West, like, imagine having like a Western Conference Finals preview in the first round. That's essentially what this is like. Two behemoths going up against each other. LeBron James and Anthony Davis have a lot to prove. Jokic and Jamal Murray, they're trying to go back to back for the first time. So they're going to be amped as well. Yeah. And it all starts Saturday. So we will catch you guys sometime next week, recapping one of these games, hopefully after a win. But for now, get strapped, buckle up, clench your butt cheeks. Let's do this. It's lit. Lakers got momentum on their side. Follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. And please also rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. Until then, Tommy, I will catch you later after the Lakers are up 2-1. Okay, really quickly, how do you see the first two games going? Do you think the Lakers get the first one and then we come back home tied? Or how do you see this playing out?
I think we split it. I don't know if we get the first or second, but I think we will be able to pull off a split in the first two.
Okay, I agree with you, and I think it's game one that we're getting. I think it's gonna play out almost exactly how that Memphis Grizzlies game one played out in Memphis. You know, when we shocked the world, and like Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura, and D'Lo have their games flowing, and Austin and Rui hit clutch shots at the end, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it should be fun. Hopefully that ends up happening. With that said, Tommy, I will catch you later.
Later.
See ya.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.